I'm Ashley Eicher.
I'm Hunter Kelly.
And welcome to an all-new episode of the All Our Favorite People podcast. Today we have our friends Jesse and Stevie Frazier.
Jesse is known, well, for a lot of things. He's known for
a lot of things.
Many, many number one hits with everyone from Thomas Rhett and John Party and Kelsey Ballerini. He's also worked with Kylie Minogue. I just want to get that out there up front,
yes.
Which is a big deal. We didn't get to talk about it. But he also is known as Telemetry, a DJ and remixer as well. And so he has a new project called Calm Springs.
And it is so good. Let's just play a little bit.
A little bit of Welcome to Calm Springs.
I mean, this album is so good, and I don't know what I really expected when I first listened to it, but it's instrumental. It's so peaceful. It makes me feel like I should be in the French countryside with a cocktail or maybe sitting in a very nice lounge.
Yes, some kind of hotel lounge.
Yes, like the good-looking suitor, maybe.
Oh, my.
But it's so good, and I love that it's different and unexpected.
Yes, a lot of inspiration from Palm Springs in the swinging 60s. Think about Frank Sinatra's pad out there. They had a lot of parties, a lot of ring-a-ding-ding action. It's just a good time.
And Stevie is the vice president of creative at Rhythm House, which is their publishing company.
It's a joint venture with Jay-Z's Roc Nation.
It is. And you've been friends with Stevie for a really long time.
Well, and Jesse, yeah, I've known both of them. I mean, we used to go back in the day to Jesse's DJ set. So yeah, but it's really fun to catch up with them. I don't know that I've ever like actually sat and talked to them like this in depth about music and the music industry before. It's always just kind of, hey, how are you doing? Yada, 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 you know? So this was really fun.
I know. I loved going as in-depth as we go in this episode. I just loved this conversation. I haven't gotten to spend a ton of time with Stevie. Like, I've known Jesse for so many years, but this was just really fun. And now I just want to hang out with him all the time.
100%. So yeah, let's get to it. Here they are, Jesse and Stevie Frazier.
Hey.
Hey, friends.
Hey, y'all. Let's talk about this project that Telemetry.
Yes.
That's how you say it.
Yeah. So I've always DJed under that name.
Yeah. Which I've enjoyed many DJ sets for many years.
Say that again, because I've always said Telemetry, and now I've realized
I used to say Telemetry, but now that I've been watching more space stuff, it's Telemetry.
The Southern drawl pronunciation is Telemetry.
Got it. Okay.
But no, it's Telemetry, and it's one of those things where if you were to go back and change it when you were young and DJing, make it something easy to pronounce, very clear on paper, I probably would have changed it. But I've always DJed under that name, so if I put out music or remixes, it's under Telemetry, but obviously...
You almost said Telemetry.
I'm like, I'm going to have to really focus on this now.
All of our country songwriter friends, like Garen Johnson, all of them are like, hey, Telemetry.
I had a friend one time be like, I found this music on MySpace by Telemetry. And I'm like, oh, that's Jesse. And they're like, no, it's Telemetry. I'm like, it's Telemetry and it's Jesse. And they were like, no, it's this DJ. I was like, no, seriously, I promise you, it's Jesse. He's just like remixing songs and making tracks. And they're like, what? MySpace days.
Oh, MySpace.
Now.
What a blessing that was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we've come so far.
Now, here's what I love about, I mean, other than I love the album already because it's been so calming.
Yes.
Like I was playing it again this weekend, driving around when people got on my nerves.
Yeah.
I was like, I'm just going to turn this on and settle down.
Good.
And it's so soothing.
Yeah. That's called Calm Springs. It came from, we were on a vacation with some friends of ours in Utah and I was getting a massage and it was like, sounds like the start of a very personal story.
But, another G-rated story on the podcast.
I was in the Moab Mountains getting a massage from my masseuse. And I realized that, but no, the music was terrible. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to that's what I'm going to do, because I personally don't feel like the world needs another singer-songwriter EP. Nothing against my colleagues that put them out all the time. That's cool. I just don't think that people are craving Jesse Frazier music. So I thought, well, you know, I'm going to get my creative kicks out. I'm going to do a spa EP, and I'm going to learn how to play Native American flute. And I bought one. I taught myself to play.
And a tongue drum.
And a Tibetan drum and all this stuff. And I made this like 10 song project. And it's all over the map. It sounds like Stranger Things. Then it sounds like Thunderstorm in the desert. Yeah, it's all over the place. So I got a massage one time listening to it. And the masseuse, she was kind of rude and pretty brash. And she just hated it. She's like, I can't find my groove. This is all over the place. So I'm like, I have screwed up this spy EP, our record. I sent it to Casey Musgraves just because on a whim, I'm like, someone's got to enjoy this baby. And maybe she's eclectic. She likes crazy stuff.
Well, if anybody's going to love like the Lawrence Welk vibe, it's Casey.
So Casey responds. So she liked three of the tracks, and all three of those tracks had that same kind of vibe. And I said, well, why don't I just scrap Dances with Wolves and just go this route, and we'll call it Calm Springs, and it will be like what I'm obsessed with Frank Sinatra, and it will be like what I imagine he would play poolside in his backyard at Palm Springs in the 60s when he's having people over. Mm. So it's kind of like glorified elevator music. And, you know, I love curating playlists and doing DJ sets and everything else, but I also love conversation and cocktails, and I wanted to put out music that people didn't pay attention to. You know, and it's the background. So that's what it is. It's called Calm Springs, and it's 7 songs, and you can put out, people have said that they study to it. Some people say they have it at cocktail parties. It should be relaxing, and it's not meant to be focused on.
Yeah, part of me felt like I should be in like the French countryside, like with a really nice cocktail.
Yes.
That's where I imagine I am when I listen to it, as opposed to in my house.
Yes.
Yeah,
or driving down martini, 65.
Yeah.
Martini, Aperol spritz, some kind of thing like that. Yeah. I can actually fold laundry to it and not be angry about folding laundry. So I'm like, oh, this is good. This is good.
Yep. Stevie's actually singing on it too. She's the only featured.
That's you? I was wondering who was doing
really?
All that.
Yeah,
the jazz notes.
Well, I think there's a SiriusXM station, Spascapes or something. So, I mean, I listen to that sometimes when I need to feel like I'm at a spa. So this just really, it also gets into like certain Sade songs that I love that I totally take to calm down.
Yes. I'm a very big Sade fan. Lovers Rock and all that stuff is huge influence to me, which, by the way, I don't know if you've heard that new Calvin Harris Weekend track that just came out a week or two ago. You'll love it because it's very Sade. But it's very much that vibe. It's a little bit of like a tropical influence there. There's some Hawaiian kind of samba steel and all kinds of bossa nova vibes. It's all over the map. So.
Kind of sounds like you're roller skating down the street with the palm trees just going by.
Mm.
Like old time, like real roller skates, 4 wheels. You know, beside each other.
Like the way we used to backward skate at the roller skating rink in like the 90s.
Yes, for sure.
Well, for me, it also brings about like Frank Sinatra's The Boy from Ipanema, which you did with Jobim, that album, which I love on vinyl. And then Diana Krall's album, Quiet Nights. Do you know that one? I just got that one on vinyl, and it is the same vibe. So I'm just really in this spot and loving that you did this, because I think this kind of music, sometimes people just listen to it and they're just like, oh, it's cheese or it's elevator music. And I think there is an invitation, like once you get a little older, maybe to like, okay, no, this just calmed you the F down.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like, so do you think you would have made this album when you were younger and more like raring to go?
No, and probably not without this crazy year.
Yeah.
You know, I just feel like, Ashley, you know this too, when we put out these shows, there's so much music, you know, as a radio DJ now or making music every Friday, there is so much music coming out. So I just
so felt, much to listen to.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And the last thing I wanted to do is just sort of like do some sort of an ego stroke thing to put it out. And I'm not knocking the people that do it. A lot of those people are brilliant songwriters and probably great vocalists, and they should be doing that. But for me, it just was a matter of going, find a lane that no one's doing, like the Four Seasons elevator lane. And so maybe we can do something that people enjoy and a few people will dig it. And, you know, it seems like people have really kind of been drawn to it. So
I think if he had put this, if he had made an EP 10 years ago, it would have been like,
oh yeah, it would have been like,
right.
Which there's a place for.
There is a place for that in elevators. There still is.
So I just feel like there's a lot of elevators in the world, and it's an untapped market that people don't really go for hard. So that's it.
Or again, like hotel, like just hotel background music. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. We sent it to the Parker at Palm Springs. I sent it to the Sunset Marquee manager. I worked with a guy named Colin Cowie, Lifestyle. He was a party planner for celebrities, and that's kind of how I got my start.
He did Oprah's Legends Ball.
Yes, he did.
Which we were just watching. Clint was finally ready to watch the Legends Ball special on ABC the other night.
Yeah.
And so we'd watch Mariah and Oprah's interview, and then they referenced the Legends Ball, and I was like, Clint, do you know about the Legends Ball? And it, where she had all of the black divas and icons at her house. And there was Colin planning the whole thing. And so... Yeah. He's a big deal. How did you hook up with Colin, who's an event planner, and plan the freaking Oprah's Legends Ball?
I was DJing at Bar 23.
Which I love those sets.
Bar 23.
The days of Layla Rule and Bar 23 in Nashville, our only club.
And that's how you know you're old school Nashville, if you start talking about Bar 23 or Layla Rule.
I had a residency there on Thursday nights, and Carol Ann Mobley knew that I was DJing, that she was a A&R person at RCA. She said, hey, a friend of mine is doing, is assisting another party planner, and they're doing the governor's daughter's engagement party downtown. Can I connect you with them? They're looking for a DJ. And I said, sure. And this guy reached out to me and said, hey, do you want to do this wedding? It's a fabulous event, and yada, yada, yada. And I told DJ, said, some guy named Colin Cowie wants me to DJ this thing. I said, I'd do it for like $500.
I was like, no. We were so broke. I'm like, dude, you could have gotten so much more money.
Yes.
Because were you guys married at this point?
No, we were just dating. And Colin used to have like the back page of InStyle magazine was always like a how to have like a low-key cocktail party with friends, but dress it up a bit, or what to do in a summer day for brunch. And so I was like, oh my gosh, he does everything. Oprah, Kardashians, and he was like, oh man. But it was great because Jesse has that left brain, right brain. So he can be creative and also be showing up early and have his stuff together and ready to go. So party planner's like, oh my gosh, the DJ is like sober and they know what they're doing. So he became obsessed with Jesse, thankfully, and he just hooked him up with parties all over the world.
Started calling me, and you know, next thing you know, we're flying to Barbados, and we had a residency at Atlantis for 5-6 years in a row, doing New Year's Eve there. And, Kim Zolciak's wedding on Bravo.
Alyssa Milano's wedding.
And then that he got me the Cash Money Records party. So I would do every year. They'd fly me out to do the Cash Money Grammy party, which I couldn't figure out. I'm like, why would you fly this white kid?
Yeah.
Out to Hollywood from Nashville to DJ these hip hop parties. And he just said, look, I like you. I can trust you. You show up on time. And those parties always got out of hand. But at least he knew the part he was responsible for was going to be taken care of, you know? So, and that led to me going out and DJing with Florida Georgia Line and Nelly, because they knew I did Cash Money parties, which led to my first number one in country in Sunday. So in a lot of ways, I'm really a firm believer that without DJing and probably without Colin Cowie setting up those gigs, I probably wouldn't have had a country music career because I didn't get my first
CA.
My first cut in Nashville happened 12 years after moving to town to be a songwriter, and I just sort of gave up on it. So
when you're working as a publisher.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't think I can do this. I can't compete with the Neil Thrashers and the Tom Shapiros and, you know, the Leslie Satchers and amazing songwriters. So I thought I would just plug songs and work as a song plugger at a publishing company.
And do secret remixes on the side for MySpace.
Yeah. I thought Bar 23 would last forever.
Oh,
didn't we all?
Now it's a boot store.
Now it is.
It's a boot store.
Had some very memorable nights there that will never be spoken of again. But so it's Stevie, at the same time, you're working in publishing too. So is that how you met? The two of you met?
Yeah, pretty much. Music business. I mean, we had mutual friends and just like the whole, like, I guess the class of 2000 probably was it, like everybody interning together, or I was interning at Warner Brothers Records. And then I started working at EMI Publishing. And so I was in the tape room and he was too at Major Bob. And yeah, just that whole publishing world that I kind of got swept up in. And yeah, and like at the time we had a co-venture with Seagale Music, which is where Chris Stapleton was. And we had Morgan Hayes, now Stapleton, and we all just became friends. And so it was like me and Morgan were like, you guys, because she knew Jesse like did tracks and stuff on the side. And she was like, y'all should do something in the studio. And they were like,
And this was long before the world knew Chris Stapleton's name.
Yeah, he was just, you know, an incredible songwriter and getting amazing cuts. And so he was doing just his own things on the side, Steel Drivers, and then his Johnson Brothers band. And Jesse was making remixes and literally putting them out to the blogs and stuff like that. And so we're like, y'all should do something together. And they were like, what would we do? Like, Chris, I think, thought he was going to go into the studio and do like some kind of rap record or hip hop record. And Jesse thought he was going to go and make like an Adele record on Chris Stapleton.
Which would be great.
I'm here for it.
Yeah. And the songs that came out of that eventually did kind of sound like that.
Yeah, I mean, it was amazing. The first time he rolled in with he brought a big upright bass and it was in a big case and had a wheel on it. He's like, I just brought this. I don't know what we're doing. My wife just put us together. And we wrote that Crash and Burn came out of that. So like that led to my relationship with Thomas Rhett. And the moral of my story is ignore all the people that say, oh, you got to focus on one thing. You got to pick your route, stick to it. I've always worn a lot of hats and every little weird thing I've done, not ever trying to do one genre of music. It's all complemented each other. So I'm always a big advocate for telling young people going, hey, look, you work hard, you can have a lot of different interests. You don't have to like go, oh wait, I got
what's
do
my
this.
Thing
because you know? A lot of people told me that, and the bosses I had were very adamant that, oh, you can't do this, you have to pick a route or it's going to cause a conflict. And literally, like I said earlier, there's not one aspect of my career that would be here without the other,
right,
me into a door, you know, whether it was Stevie hooking up with Chris and the fact that we were writing for pop music, that, and then they just made something fresh that ended up getting cut in country music. You know, it's just a very wild story.
Well, I feel like in the early 2000s, when we were all coming out of college, that was the same thing I heard. Like, okay, you're going into management, you need to stay in artist management. That's where you're going to be forever, or you're going to be in publishing. Cause that was a lot of my internships and first jobs in the business. And then life just kind of takes this different route and different doors open up to where it's not like we're all hosting radio shows now and doing interviews, things I never thought I would be doing, but you just naturally progress into where your other gifts are.
Absolutely. When I first got here, I was like, oh, I'm going to be a music scout or something like that. I'm like, oh, that's a record label. That's all I knew. So I just was lucky enough to my internship boss at Warner, which was Jeremy Witt at the time, was friends with Ben Vaughn, who was in the A&R department at EMI, and they just needed a person in the tape room, which, you know, I burned CDs all day. I had no real idea. I mean, I went to school for music business, but I didn't understand really what publishing was. When I first got here, I was like, oh, publishing, that's books. And so I didn't know any of that. And then that led to, you know, my so far 15, 16 year career in publishing. I thought for sure I didn't even know I was going to do that because I didn't know what it was. So you just kind of go, I'll take the job, teach me something. And if I don't like it, I'll do something else, you know?
Yeah. A friend of mine, Anita Hogan, she said some of the best advice to me. She'd been in publishing and artist management for years. And she told me just do a little bit of everything and whatever interests you, you know? And now like, that's how it is. And it's so fun to have all these different outlets for creativity, as I see both of you having, you know. And I think that takes us back to Calm Springs, because I think I sent it to y'all. Ashley hasn't heard it, but I made some tracks with Randy.
Randy Brown.
Yeah, which is not fit for public consumption. Basically,
why have you not sent these to me?
It's the dark web.
Because basically I'm trying to get out of my system wanting to remake Madonna's Justify My Love and Erotica. That's all I want to do is just make these filthy Madonna songs. And so I just, you know, they're not fit for everybody, including my parents. So, but for me, it was such like a creative space of freedom. And I feel like, Jesse, I imagine that's what Calm Springs was for you. Something that like, this is just kind of just a creative exercise that then fires you up for everything else you have going on. Is that right?
Yeah. I mean, basically, you know, as a commercial songwriter, which is my main job, we're jumping around every single day with a different artist. You know, yesterday is pop music, today is country music. And sometimes it's very enjoyable. I love what I do, but it gets a little bit factory. Mm-hmm. You're creating 5 days a week at 11 a.m. we start. And, you know, however long that goes. And your job is to help this artist tell their story or say something that's on their mind. Could be a party, could be a heartbreak, right? Which I very much enjoy. But at the same time, there are aspects of music. I was raised on oldie stations and Motown and everything else. There's aspects of music that I don't get to exercise. So it is nice, like you said, to go into those creative spaces and just go, man, this is just purely for the art of it, you know? Because the other thing as a songwriter that happens from a New Music Friday or new Apple releases, that you see this stuff, there's FOMO that occurs when Justin Bieber drops a new album and you're like, oh, that sounds amazing. Ah, oh, John Bellion's on that one too. And you start, it's a very competitive world that we all live in. And most of it's healthy. Some of it's not, you know, some of it's like, ah, man, we tried so hard to get on that album and we didn't. So it changes your listening. Mm-hmm. I love music as much as I always have, but it always will forever be tinged now with the industry and the fact that I do this for a living. So to make a project that a songwriter or someone that's an accountant can listen to and not have that feeling of, damn, I wish I would have, you know, so that was part of it too, where that my colleagues can enjoy it at cocktail parties and not feel like, oh, I'm trying to flex and put all these features on and I'll call our friends to do this. And, you know, it's just background.
Well, and I also love the track listing, the creativity behind the track listing. Names. We've got Mai Tai, Let the Drugs Wear Off, The Leopard Room, Sinatra's Pool Party, Supper Club. Those are just the ones I pulled.
I mean,
like,
the Mai Tai.
How did you decide, like, oh, these are the titles I'm going to go with?
There's a book called, I believe it's called My Life with Mr. S, and it's from Sinatra's valet driver. It's a very great read. Talks about Marilyn. And just the Sinatra story is it's wild because his career kind of had two different sides of it, you know, where he kind of was fading and then kind of reboot. So basically, I always think of it as like this kind of like a Lana Del Rey album in a way, where it's like happy, sad, you know, very much like the Casey Musgraves song too. That era of his life to me is this, oh my gosh, these parties and this epic time and this guy is so cool, but yet it's very tragic, you know? So I don't know. I like the aspect of these sort of, you know, downers.
We sat down too and we're like, what is a drink from the 60s? And we were like going, I was reading like list of top 10 desserts from 1965.
Yeah. Back to Alaska.
It's very famous in Palm Springs. I just thought it didn't sound great on.
Yeah, I was like, can you name one Back to Alaska? I was like, that no one's gonna know what that is. But we were like water melancholy, and we were just like some kind of spritzer, or I'm like, Mai Tai sounds good. And yeah, we're just like trying to think of all the things, you know, Palm Springsy. And
I love things that set a mood. So I wanted that. Delaney Royer is a good friend of mine. She did the album artwork. And, you know, you want the track listing to match. And I don't think enough artists pay attention to that. Our genre, I think, suffers from terrible album artwork syndrome.
It's true.
And
just call it what it is.
Yeah. There are very few people that I think really cater that vibe. So if I was ever a real artist out there doing this for a living, I would want to be one that kind of caters that mood from the visuals all the way to the song titles.
It's like going into a restaurant and you love the food, but the vibe is just trash. And you're like, oh, man, I would come here so much more if it was cool.
Yeah, I'm glad you said that because I can't. There are some artists who like their entire catalog. I'm like, I look through it on Apple Music and it's like, you have maybe two poses over 20 albums.
Yeah, maybe.
No, but I do want to say with the Frank Sinatra moment, I just have really been in a spot with researching another project where I am, of course, upset. Well, I was obsessed with Trisha Yearwood's record, Let's Be Frank, which I don't know if you heard it, but she went to Capitol Records and got Frank Sinatra's engineer and a bunch of the string players and who were on that and made this record. And it's just divine. And then Willie Nelson's Stardust, this just kind of jazz influence in country music. I don't see a reason why these songs couldn't be morphed into something else that takes us to a fun, creative place in the format. Do you think so? Have you heard anything like that?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, well, you know, when Casey did the Golden Hour album, she had texted me and said, hey, I want to do something like a Bee Gees track. And at first I was like, that's weird. I cannot picture Casey doing that. But then I was like, well, I bet she means like the 70s chill out, how deep is your love side. Mm-hmm. So I made this track that became the song Wonder Woman. And it was in that kind of 10cc meets, like I said, 70s Bee Gees, a little bit of that sort of yacht rocky moment to it. So I think that there's people in town that are doing some really creative stuff. It's the healthiest I've ever seen the genre because it's polarized. I really like Nashville when you have a Luke Combs and then you've got a Maren Morris on there. Mm-hmm.
You've
got a Thomas Rhett and you've got a Sam Hunt and you've got Casey and you've got Chris Stapleton. And it feels like EDM. When I was coming up in electronic dance music, we had all these little subgenres of, oh, that's dubstep or that's house music. And a lot of them hated each other and there was infighting. They thought this was real country music and this is the antichrist of country. But I think it's healthy. I think any creative environment needs that spectrum. So I do think that there's room for that. If you look at Brett Eldridge's Christmas album that he put out, the big band vibe that he did on that, his voice is incredible for that stuff. So you're starting to see more and more people take liberties and even sampling. Like if you look at Sam Hunt's Hard to Forget, Keith Urban obviously sampled the Merle Haggard thing. So sonic elements are kind of being introduced. Another thing we haven't done, and I've been here 20 years, we're just kind of starting to do it, is, you know, pop music does a lot of retro sounding stuff, right? So look at Dua Lipa, the Future Nostalgia album.
Doja.
Doja Cat, right. I mean, those albums, and Meghan Trainor and Weeknd, and all these albums use retro sounds in the sonics of it, right? And country music is just starting to dabble in making the music sound retro in certain ways, and whether that could be something like a Crash and Burn and it's Motown R&B influenced, or if it's more of a, you know, drinking problem Midland vibe. So that's exciting to me too, is the landscape of the sonic elements kind of matching the song. So it's not just a traditional country song, it actually sounds like a traditional country song. Or, you know, we do stuff with like Randy Clark, it sounds like 7 Year 8, and you can do these retro vibes, you know.
Are you having a moment, Hunter, now?
I just love Brandy. What was the song? Which one did you do on her record? Was it Long Walk?
Long Walk.
Yeah.
So good.
I really love her as a hang and a person. She's funny. She's smart. She's a brilliant songwriter. She's very calm.
Yes.
She's really good with other artists as well. She kind of checks her artist ego at the door. And she's a really, really great collaborator.
Yeah, she's not afraid to go there on 80s sounds either, which...
Oh, yeah.
She loved that kind of... I always make her do Roseanne Cash vibes whenever...
Yeah. Well, I mean, when I'm on an Ann Murray YouTube jag, I'm just sending her videos all the time. I'm like, yes. This 1986 David Foster Ann Murray number, You and Me, Now and Forever, just divine. Just absolutely divine.
Awesome. Did you see the David Foster documentary?
No, I need to.
Man.
Yeah. Is it good?
it's good because the art is good. My biggest beef with a lot of these Netflix documentaries is they're self-made. That's always a problematic.
Right. Real self-aggrandizing.
Yeah. Little ego trip.
Well, and from what I hear, David Foster loves David Foster.
Yeah. There's no bigger fan. But the catalog is pretty undeniable.
Oh, God, yes.
The Chicago, the Peter Cetera stuff, the Celine,
Barbara.
You know, it's like, dang.
Yeah.
So it's worth a watch, but you do walk away going, whew.
And you kind of go, man, that was a day when a producer, just the artist was like, tell me what to do,
right?
What do I sing? And there is something to be said about just being able to go, I have the freedom with this amazing voice to make it do whatever I want. And when you are a producer that good, it just is.
Oh, yeah.
Gold. I mean, oof.
That's the common thread through the whole documentary, whether it's Michael Bublé or Josh Groban, all the way to Chicago. Every single artist just said, tell me what to do.
Hmm.
Those are the ones that he did the best with. And he says it himself. I work the best when I'm left work alone. Pretty wild.
Thank you guys so much for listening to the All Our Favorite People podcast. If you like what you hear, go check out the All Our Favorite People community on Patreon. That's patreon.com/allourfavoritepeople. And for as little as $3 a month, you can help us keep the podcast growing as we add live shows and events.
We're also offering you exclusive access into planning episodes, as well as off-the-cuff interactive bonus content that we just can't fit into the show. You'll find out who's coming on the show first and possibly get a shout out on the podcast.
I don't know why I wanted to laugh at you just then. Check it out on Patreon. That's patreon.com/allourfavoritepeople. You know, as you were talking about just the different representation in country music right now, I kind of go back to the conversation we were having earlier about what we were told when we started, that you had to stay in one lane.
Sure.
And like, I think that's probably been the most frustrating conversation for me over the last, I don't know, 10, 15 years in this business. And we've definitely evolved in the last couple of years where we said like, oh, well, you have to just sing this particular thing. You have to stay in this particular lane for every single artist, and not letting people be creative and flex any other muscles.
Sure.
But look at what has come out of the last couple of years when we've opened that up a little bit.
Absolutely.
Totally. And music fans, I mean, the scope of just all the music we've sat here and talked about, you know, just in this little bit of time. Growing up, it wasn't like, oh, you're only allowed to listen to your country radio station and that's it.
Right.
You know, like, we listen to everything. And I don't know, even my dad, who's a diehard country music fan, he listened to, you know, it's like, well, a lot of Southern rock and classic rock, which now would be country music. And you know, just stuff like that. There's so much that we've taken in, like in our love of music. You just can't say you can only sing this or you can only put out that or whatever. I mean, there are some haters, but, you know, when you really do something from your heart that you love, I think that the most, like if it's authentic to you, then there's going to be more people that enjoy that and more people that relate to it than people who don't.
Yeah.
Well, I know, even thinking about us creating our shows on Apple Music, like I have guest list radio, Jesse, you've got a little bit country radio, Hunter has proud radio. I think one of the most empowering things for me has been that I have creative control and I can basically play what I want, because a typical playlist that I have just normally would include things like, you know, Lizzo and Mariah Carey right next to Kelsea Ballerini and Maren Morris and,
yes.
You're what? I know I just named all females, but today.
Well, why would you name a man?
Why not?
Well, I mean, that's the way a normal person listens to music.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Radio formats came because of regions, right? When they first started off, it was a regional thing. You could only get this radio station. And they played basically that one format of music, and they didn't have different styles. But nowadays, we all, different styles of clothes, we're aware of what's going on in the world. There's different styles of music. So like a lot of our shows on that channel are, I think, how a normal listener enjoys music.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, and the Ken Burns documentary is another interesting one where it talks about country music never being one thing.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that when it evolved out of bluegrass, there was haters. They thought, oh my gosh, much like when Bob Dylan picks up an electric guitar, right? There's everyone thinks it's blasphemy, and you know,
it's a whole garden party song.
Yeah, or like George Harrison, Ricky Nelson talks about that in that song where he said, look, I did a country music thing and now everyone hates me and they're booing it. They want to hear the old stuff. So there's always going to be someone that thinks country music is this. And there's plenty of people that think I don't belong in country music. My songs are probably the most hated songs on country radio.
But Dirt on My Boots by Dumb Party. Like that was a thing interviewing you on the carpet when that song was up for the CMA award before. What did it win at the CMAs?
No, we lost to,
Screw whoever won. Anyway, I was
one of those pop songs.
Yeah. But I was just like, dang, this song is so creatively country. And I just love that you're bringing that in there. I will say though, Jesse, I got to say, I was putting together my set list for Proud Radio Episode 2.
Okay.
The finale is Olivia Newton-John and ELO Xanadu. And then I play Miley Cyrus's Midnight Sky in there. So Clint, my man, was all like, wait, in this country? I was like, oh, no, we can play anything we want. Just listen to Jesse's show. Like, whenever I feel like I'm going, like, can I do this? Oh, yeah, Jesse's.
Yeah.
Like, you've given me so much license to, like, really not have a boundary on what I've, you know, what I'm putting in the show. So it's really freeing.
Like, I love to listen to the show because I'm like, oh, I love this song. And then something comes on, like, oh, I love this song too. Mm-hmm. And just like, it is a little bit of everything. And luckily, he's been able to just go, oh, I played even songs that there's a little bit country playlist. And then there's a little bit country radio show. Mm-hmm. The playlist will have things on it that he does play on the show. And then also he just kind of pulls from whatever and go, oh, I forgot about this. Or at first we were kind of like, oh, do you want to add one more thing to the plate of stuff that we have to
right.
do? And then you're like, actually, yeah, this is the cool thing that you kind of get that creative outlet and go, oh, I can listen to all those songs that, you know, I don't get to necessarily do every day in the writing room.
It does make you revert back to an old school listener in the sense of before I was writing songs, mm-hmm. doing the radio show, because we're also trying to spotlight the interconnectivity between these worlds. Like, so John Bellion, he's on the new Justin Bieber track. He wrote Memories from Room 5. But
I had Midnight Sky.
Yeah. But he's also been in town a lot. So we have a cut with Thomas Rhett that we did with John Bellion. He's been writing with Kelsey Ballerini. You know, Sean Douglas can write Sorry Not Sorry for Demi Lovato, but also Die a Happy Man. So a lot of the listeners don't understand that just like they don't really care about genres, us as creators, we are all over the place. We collaborate with all kinds of people all the time. And so doing the show has really been able to go, look, this is pop and country, but we're all pop and country. We're all intertwined and it's a music world. So,
well, and it keeps it fresh. Like then you don't get stuck in, you know, when you kind of close that bubble around you of like, this is what I do. This is the song that I write or whatever. You might have success for a hot minute. You might have a really good run, but if you're not like paying attention to other stuff that's going on around you, you can kind of get left behind or, you know, just kind of not be known for the person that kind of invites something new in and just says, hey, we don't have to call it something. And if we get in here and make this song together and the demo is, I mean, Dirt on My Boots sounded like a Blackstreet song. It was like No Diggity.
Yeah.
And so, but you know, then you get Bart Butler going and putting fiddle on it in the studio and it becomes the countryest thing, you know? So it's like, we could always, if we need to country it up a bit or, you know, kind of chill it out, whatever, once we get to the finished product, but just go in there and no boundaries.
I'm just thinking about even in the 80s, you know, the same guy who wrote What's Love Got to Do with It with Tina Turner also wrote one of the most country Judd songs, Maybe Your Baby's Got the Blues. So that's the other thing too that I try to point out. And especially with new artists, sometimes when I'm like helping them figure out like, who are you? What's your sound? You know, it's all like there is a precedent for anything you want to do in country music. There has been done before. And if you think that Willie Nelson has never done Cheese, you just go listen to him doing Wind Beneath My Wings in 83. Because it really speaks to my synthesizer love and heart.
Yeah.
That's another thing too, y'all. Oh, y'all be good to ask this. Do y'all think that because we were born and came of age loving music in the 80s, that like I have this theory that synthesizer is like our native language, like really, whereas like, because I think, you know, when you go back and look at like, they look at, you know, Joni Mitchell or Bob Dylan and what they, Neil Young, what they did in the 80s, they're like, oh, it was their synthesizer period and it's trash. But for me, I'm like, this is like my native tongue. Like I respond to this. I think partly because all the stuff you were hearing on the radio, like even you think about Bruce Springsteen was pure synth in the 80s. It's a wonderful thing, I think, you know.
I'm a terrible musician. I can play a little bit, but I can draw and manipulate sounds very well. So everything on Calm Springs is fake.
Yeah.
Except for the tongue drum and the Native American flute.
Yeah.
That Native American flute.
So you didn't have a string set because the strings sound wonderful.
I drew all those parts. So but that's based on synthesizers. Yeah. Right? So I wouldn't be a music creator today without that. And mm-hmm. So those sounds evolved through the years. But I am still very, very nostalgic to that, the Stranger Things type soundtracks, mm-hmm. or Blade Runners, or that sort of new wave or dream wave sound, which is all over that new Weekend record as well, you know, going back to these new retro sounds.
Have y'all spent much time with Olivia Newton-John's late 70s, early 80s stuff?
Haven't. Should I go back?
Well, I've been telling people.
Really trying to bring it back.
Back. Well, if you listen to Proud Radio, Xanadu is the final track. But John Farrer, I've talked about this with, I think, Sarah Bareilles, and is friends with John Farrer's son, Sam Farrer. He's around. But Olivia's, he was basically her David Foster, writing and producing all this stuff. And the chord progressions are just, and the beats are just so out there that I've basically been telling people, if you go back and like crib some of this and steal it, people will think you're a genius and they'll never know where it came from. So I'll just, yeah. Which gets me to another thing. So, you know,
I'm in a lawsuit with Olivia.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. I have a mix I made a few years ago called Minor Desires, Major Needs, which is a line from her song Landslide. And it was a real soundtrack for our summer a few years ago. So I need to slip that over to you.
I love it.
Yeah, I guess we're to the part of the show, Ashley, where we just kind of tell you what we need you to do. We have a tendency to do this. We give us, you know, we're like, you know.
It's in direction.
Yeah, the other day we're like Caitlin Smith. Caitlin, you need to go make a super trio with Lucy Silvas and Ashley Monroe.
You could go do that. We will be here for it and we will promote it. Yeah. We're
Ashley, what do you need them to go do?
I mean, I don't know that I really have anything to assign today. It's just more wanting to be with our friends and hang out. But I was just thinking about
there needs to be part 2, 3, 4. Because it I don't even realize that it ends so fast. Mm-hmm. Like I'm like, oh, yeah. It's over. And I'm like looping it. I'm like, okay, babe, time to get snap to it. It's time to get on part 2.
Like, how does that work with the two of you working together? Because you have Rhythm House, which is your publishing company. It's a partnership with Roc Nation. Like, how does that balance, like, when Jesse's creating something, like, is Stevie like, okay, let's move to this. Like, how does this work with the two of you?
She runs the company, and she's sort of the matriarch. Everyone, you should see the writers, they all kind of look up to her and want her approval. And we all do. So basically, she kind of vetted it out. She'd be like, she would say, in fact, that Watermelon Collie track, the last track, she was like, that sound. And she'll like try to describe the sound. Whatever that sound is, get rid of it.
I'll come in after, like, because he's always finishing the tracks or something after a co-write or when he's like creating tracks just to kind of stockpile to have to play for people. I'm like, something is weird in there. You got to get rid of that. And he's like, I don't hear that. And I'm like, it's in there. Or I'll be like, babe, you should add a do, do, do. And so he's like, oh, this, the, you know, the technical term for it all.
Yeah, the do, do, do. That's what I was saying.
Interpret all.
I do that a lot to him. And he's like, okay, all right, enough. And I'm like, then he does. And he's like, okay, that sounds pretty good.
Yeah. Well, she's got great taste in music. Obviously, you know, she's had a lot of cuts and pitches our song. So, and man, you got to get out of your own head. Everyone thinks that they're so precious and we are all so good at what we create and we don't know what we're doing. I truly believe any songwriter that you guys ever talk to that thinks they know a hit song when they wrote it, you can just say, shake your head at them. So I don't personally believe any of us know. I feel like we know what we like, right? And we all have similar mutual tastes. And then we have things that all four of us would branch off and like differently, right? So I don't know. I think you got to loop in people and go, is this dog shit or is this good?
Yeah.
Sorry. I don't know if this is a Disney.
No, I mean, listen, we've had a lot of explicit
We can put an E on this.
Yeah, I mean,
I mean, be like,
y'all work with Jay-Z, so it's fine. We expect it. You DJ for Lil Wayne and Nicki Minaj.
Yes, our working together just has evolved over the last 5 years. Of now, it's easier than it was in the beginning. So
sure, it's hard. I mean, marriage is hard, right?
Right.
We've been in couples counseling since we got together. So I swear by that. And then just working together, this music business is crazy. It's hard.
Yeah.
We have a lot of characters, and working with songwriters can be very maddening because they're basically addicts addicted to this crazy world of this music business. And it's a game, and there's ups and downs, and you get your butt kicked one day and then you're on top of the world the next. And the very next day you got to get back to work.
Right.
Going for what's going to come out a year from now or 2 years from now. So, you know, being married to that and then going home, you know, and she wants to vent about the day and the work, you have to learn how to listen and not try to fix it. You know, it's hard. So, yeah, it's more of a mantra and a practice than it is something we've perfected. But
oh, my gosh.
Yeah. I do love it. I don't understand how people don't have that just because it is such a, to us, music is a lifestyle more than it is a career. So I can't imagine not having that.
Well, we have we've had to figure out like how to be like, okay, we have to turn this off for the next 2 hours or I'm going to cut your head off, you know? So we just have to be like, all right, enough of this. And, you know, whereas before, if you go home and vent about your boss or your coworkers or the day, well, now I'm talking about you. So I'm like, hey, you got on my nerves today. We got it. And I've still got to like you for dinner. So, you know, like, and I'm not telling you this so that you could go, oh, well, what you need to go tell your coworker is, I'm just like saying, whew, it was a lot today, or, you know, enough healthy talk about that. And then enough cutting it off and being like, all right, let's do something completely not music related.
Mm-hmm. Do y'all feel like over the years y'all have gotten to a place where you're able to handle the highs and lows and the ups and downs of the music industry better? I kind of see it as a kind of a thing of it's like I care deeply, but also I have enough experience and long view now, thank God, to know that like everything's not a deal breaker and you've got to leave room for creativity and others. You know, you're not in control of everything, basically.
Yes.
We do a flip-flop. Positivity. And we always kind of joke that when she's having the Debbie Downer gloomy day or week, hopefully I'm the opposite and we kind of work on each other. And, you know, she went through breast cancer last year.
Yeah.
So 2020 was supposed to be the upswing.
Good year.
And then that quickly fell into the dumpster fire. But, you know, we do a pretty good job of trying to pep each other up. One thing that will be constant in this business is the ups and downs. That's the only thing I can count on. I am going to write a song in 10 minutes and it might be terrible and never be heard, or it might go on and
be the next single and be the next number one and whatever. But luckily we are on opposite happy high and low schedules. And I think too, like just being older and having already been, you know, through a bunch of business, music business and the highs and lows of the business, you know, a lot of times when you're younger and even just working together, you're like seeking validation from something that you're already worthy just being alive. But you don't know that for a long time. So, and if you're looking toward, you know, something that can be sometimes shallow or narcissistic or full of ego, this business, you know, if you're seeking the validation from that, it could be a long time before you feel good about it. So I think handling the highs and lows of business has been part of just like being together, being in therapy and just being like, okay, not just the business, but life is just full of like, so you have to go, okay, there was a moment where we did get both of us kind of cynical and being like, oh, well, you know, you get a cut. Oh, it's not going to make the record. Or I'll be happy when that, you know, when the back in the day when the CD came out and saw it on the track listing or whatever, you know, you'd be like, I'll be excited if it makes the record. And then it makes the record and you're like, well, let's see if it gets to be a single. Or, you know, oh, well, this single's in the 30s. Well, I'll get excited when it's top 10. And before that, when we were first starting, you get a cut and you're just like, Bloody Marys, we're leaving, let's go. And a cut might have not meant anything back then, but we kind of had to go, all right, we've got to stop going, oh, let's see if, like, it's still hard to get cuts. And you can have a lot of success. And people now, luckily in our world, they, for me, as a business person, they're like, oh, I'm listening to the songs that Stevie brings because we've got a good track record. And I know I like her taste in music. Or Jesse or our writers, you know, here have had enough hits that they go, oh, I want to hear a Carrie Barlow song. Oh, let me listen to that. You know, before it was, you're like begging, mm-hmm. please right. listen to this Jesse Fraser song. I promise it's good. And now we are lucky enough to have that. So we have to go, okay, we still have to celebrate getting these outside cuts or a song with an artist that we co-wrote is going to make the record. Like we do have to, mm-hmm. we have to stop getting like, oh, well, let's see what mm-hmm. it does. Just the fact that we did it is enough to celebrate, you know, especially in 2020, we're like, oh, are we going to have a publishing company at the end of this year? Like, yeah. are we going to be able to continue to support these writers and be here for them? And, you know, while we're dealing with being business owners and being husband and wife and being a song plugger and being a publisher and, you know, a mentor, and how do we like go, okay, you know, our creative manager, Vanna, is amazing. Like, how do I not go, well, everything sucks right now. I don't want her to have that outlook on the industry. I want her to be excited for stuff. So it's tough, but we just kind of have to go, hey, dude, you're kind of in a crap mood and it's okay for right now, but let's kind of snap out of it tomorrow.
Yeah. You got to check each other, I think.
Yeah.
Well, I think if there's anything this year has taught us, and I can imagine, you know, you walking through breast cancer last year, it's like being really grateful for every thing that we have, the people that are in our lives, like what we get to do, instead of going to that cynical place that we've all gone to of like, you know, the world's burning and the music industry is terrible and I hate everyone. Like, I mean, I've gone to that place where I'm like, what am I doing?
Right.
Therapy definitely helps, but, you know, being grateful.
Yes. Yeah. And just being like, okay, we lost that single or whatever, yeah. and you're just going, okay, what are we going to do? All I know is, hey, let's right now go do a track with Tongue Drum and Native American Flute.
Yes, yes.
But then, you know, it's also, there are times when you go, oh, you know, Kelsey was working a single and then she decided to put out Hole in the Bottle, and that was a gift. That was a, you know, a surprise that we didn't see coming, and we're like, okay, we might have lost that, but look at this. It showed up.
Country.
And yeah, we're going to do it. We're going to do okay. And then Jordan Davis came out and we're like, oh, we weren't expecting that single. And you just kind of go, okay, it's always going to, as long as we keep working and keep going, there's nothing we can't, like if you go and say, oh, we can't write that kind of song or we can't, they're not going to like this for so-and-so. If I pitch a song that's too country to a popier art, we just kind of can't go, oh, I can't do that. Then something good will happen eventually.
You always got to go. Yeah. Always got to go and screw things up and mess with the status quo. That's what I say.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Isn't that the truth? Yeah.
You know, keep it interesting. Oh, well, do you have, an 11 o'clock, right?
They can wait a little bit. You're good.
No, it's at 11:30.
Oh, 11:30. Good.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, good.
Do you feel like this conversation has inspired the write you're about to have?
I hope so.
I love conversations like this. My favorite part about songwriting is that moment before you start writing and you're kind of going, you're sharing life and you're talking about things and making sure you don't, am I crazy? It's basically that.
Right? Yeah.
That's why I love these kind of conversations.
And the answer is yes.
And hopefully, your listener out there is wanting to be a songwriter or any side of business and going, oh, okay, well, you know, maybe I don't have to listen to that person going, that's not how you do it.
Yeah. There's no one way to be in this business or to have success. There's no one way. There's anything I've learned.
Yep. I really think that's an unhealthy thing. You mentioned when you were coming up and out of school, man, the doom and gloom we were at. I went to Michigan State and then transferred to Belmont. The doom and gloom message when I was graduating.
Mm-hmm. Because of file sharing.
Oh, yeah.
When I was coming out of MTSU with the same message.
Yeah.
I mean, I loved them. They were great, but.
Oh, yeah, because everything is like, oh, vinyl is dead. And what is CDs? And, you know, and then it's MP3s. Oh, that's it. And the radio is going to go away or whatever it is.
I look back on that and I feel really fortunate to have come up in that time because we're all really close together in age. And it was like, we were getting that at Belmont. It was like, oh my God, you're not going to have jobs and y'all better quit this file sharing if you want to have a job. And then iTunes happens and it makes absolute sense. You pay 99 cents or $1.29 for a single like you always have, or $10 to $15 for an album like you always, you know. And it's just like, it was the same thing when streaming happened. It was like it immediately made sense of how this is going. So it's always going to be there. There's always going, people are always going to want music. It's just the delivery system changes. And I feel great because it keeps us, you know, like every time some new technology comes up, my first instinct now that I'm almost 40 is, oh, I don't know about all this. Like TikTok. I've been doing media training and writing a bio for an artist who's 17 who just broke on TikTok. And it's great. And the thing is, I'm all like, I don't know. You know, and first I'm like, I don't know how TikTok works, all this stuff. And then we're having the conversation. It's like, oh, yeah, this is the same stuff. It's just, you know, 5 years ago it would have been Instagram and now you're just on TikTok. But it's the same connection with music that happens.
You just have to be willing to evolve.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and you have to go, okay, maybe we're not, you know, buying CDs anymore or whatever, and maybe that kind of part of the industry shrinks a little bit, mm-hmm. but then a whole new industry opens up and mm-hmm. Spotify creates different jobs and a mm-hmm. different kind of job that you never even knew you would love to have.
Yeah.
You know?
I had another question, and so I think we were at the Brandi Clark listening party. Was that last year? We were at Station Inn.
Yes. Yeah.
I sat next to y'all. And I had this other theory that I asked about at the time. Wanted Jesse's opinion on it. Was, do you think the stuttering sound of like Bills, Bills, Bills by Destiny's Child or like There You Go by Pink from 20 years ago would come back around?
Yeah.
So I just wondered. And at the time you had like one song that kind of felt like that, but I was like, I just really think that. That's another, it's like my Olivia Newton-John theory. It's like, I think if you brought back that, it would blow some kids' minds. I think it would blow kids' minds if we brought that back.
It's in T-shirt.
Well, yeah.
You're like, T-shirt.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I do love that song.
Yeah, it is. Oh, my gosh.
One of my pet peeves is when people have decided this is over. You can't do whistles. You can't do O's. Oh, snaps. Don't put snaps in the song. When someone has decided, I get in this argument with Shane McNally all the time. He's like, oh, I'm so over songs that reference songs or songs that start with American blank. I just think that the bottom line is everything is still on the table at all times. So we will have the stutter edits. We'll have the Ella, Ella, Ella's back. We'll have all the Kesha-esque TikToks and everything. And it's just, it's music, right? So one man's, oh, that's dead and that's dated. Is the next person's, oh, we're doing that now.
What is that Jason Derulo song, Savage Love, that sounds like an Atari video game track? Yeah. It's like, boop, beep, boop, boop.
Yeah, it sounds like a demo on a Casio keyboard. But it's a huge song, another TikTok moment, you know?
I really enjoy Stevie's, like, renditions of different sounds. That's what I'm really here for.
I'm trying to get her to make a sample pack. She does a great.
Like, I would.
Stevie, can I get a ringtone? Like, what? Can I get a ringtone? Like, anything? Like,
I would just love to have my little MIDI keyboard with Stevie. With Stevie, yeah. Cut. You know.
She does a great snare drum. It's like, it hits hard. It's like trap, dirty trap.
Oh my God. My mom talks about that all the time. I'll do like drum sounds and like sing like that, like do background music with my voice as a kid. And she was like, oh my God, I almost didn't survive it, Hunter. Like I'd just be in the back seat, like beatbox, making all these.
Yeah. Man, if they would have had a camera on, your childhood would be Netflix gold.
Well, Lamar Kelly chose to buy a $1,000 life cycle exercise bike instead of a video camera. And then a $300 Mont Blanc pen.
Mont Blanc.
Yeah, wow. Lamar. Well, he's a banker. Had to have a nice pen.
That's his
never sense. Never bought a video camera. So I mean, the revenue streams that we're missing out on not having that footage.
That is true.
I'm still upset about.
I can hear it.
I will never forget. Therapist. I will never get over Lamar's exercise bike.
Pain is real.
Oh yeah. Well, that's all Lord. I got, y'all. I love it.
You are the best.
Congratulations on the podcast and the radio shows. You guys are both killing it.
Oh, thanks.
Thank you.
Y'all too. Holy crap.
Y'all too.
Part of a dynasty, really. Just a media dynasty.
I mean, well, we're working on it.
Yeah.
When Oprah calls, that's when we'll really know things are happening.
All the Apple shows that you guys are doing are going to be on OWN.
Well, that was the crazy thing. We were watching Oprah's conversations on Apple Plus with Mariah, and I looked over at Clint, and I'm all like, Oprah and I are working with the same company. Thanks.
the Kevin Bacon, Green are real close.
Yep. Pretty soon. Now think, if this wouldn't have been 2020, there would have been this big launch party. We would have been rubbing elbows.
I know. Yeah. We could actually hug each other.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And, you know, get drunk and talk Oprah's head off.
Yeah. Jesse could DJ it. It'd be great.
I just got the BMI Awards invite. And it's so sad. It's like, we'll be featuring online. See if you've won an award online. We won't be doing live. It's like, oh, God, I feel so bad for the.
Oh, man.
It's so hard.
Being writer of the year when you don't even get to have like a party to celebrate or to go on that BMI stage or ASCAP or whatever and just be like, we did it. And have everybody just be like, you did it. Now it's kind of like, texting, congratulations.
Yeah. And
you're
sign on
like,
CP one.
Well, and also, like, you know, you want to get a new outfit for that kind of stuff. And I haven't bought much of anything this year. We did a photo shoot 2 weeks ago, and I was like, do I even have clothes to wear?
Yeah. Are you wearing pants? Right
now? Yeah. Yeah, I am.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm full, I could be full body, which is part of me showing up for this interview.
My quarantine. 19 is glad that she doesn't have to get into a dress this year for the BMIs. That is for sure.
Listen, I said to somebody the other day after that photo shoot, I was like, did my cheeks get bigger in the last month? Like, am I a chipmunk now? Like, what is happening?
I was just brave to wear that black t-shirt that I wore when I was really brave.
I mean, that's right. We're all doing the best we can. It's fine.
That's right.
Thank you.
Y'all, this has been so much fun.
Love you guys. So much fun.
Thanks for having us. Thanks for listening to the music.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, Calm Springs. Just keep Calm it coming.
Springs, Calm Springs Part 2. And we'll have to have a cocktail party at the
Graduate Hotel at White Limousine.
White Limousine.
Yes.
That was the thing. We were like, oh, we could have a release party at White Limousine. It would be so perfect.
I know, because it looks so 60s. Yeah.
I know. Oh, next. Part two.
Love you guys.
Love it. Love you guys.
That was Sinatra's Pool Party from the album Calm Springs from Telemetry. Puts you in a great mood, doesn't it?
I mean, you guys just need to go listen to the whole record. And honestly, just go check out all of Jesse's catalog because he's written some of your favorite songs.
Yes. Oh, we should also mention his show. Yeah, go check out his show on Apple Music.
Go check out his show on Apple Music. And then Stevie. I just love her.
Awesome.
No, no. She's also making cookies all over Instagram. So if you want to go check out her desserts... They make me hungry every time she posts one. Oh, guys, go follow them on social media. You can follow us at All Our Favorite People. You can find me at Ashley Eicher. You can find Hunter at Nashville HK. Make sure to rate, review, and subscribe. We don't want you to miss a single episode.
All right. Thank you.
We'll see you guys next week.